First, just a few words of motivation. Some of you may have heard that in the mid-90s, for the first time, experimentalists were able to produce some Bose-Einstein condensate, something which had been predicted in the 30s, in particular by Einstein, by Bose and Einstein. Huh? Okay. But the prediction or the experiment?
The experiment.
The experiment? Okay.
Prediction is
the right. Okay. It was discovered by using metastable alkali gases, and then later in 1998-99 on polarized hydrogen atom. And now it's a whole industry because these objects are very... these macroscopic quantum states are extremely interesting to study and to use. Okay, so there is a real physics motivation, even if the calculation is somewhat for the physics of the future. Okay, just a full reference so that you know that there are some, and they will be on the web eventually. Okay, the paper I will referring to is the second paper where my name figure out, and so the few other references. There is now a review article, a review of modern physics on that. I will use Large N techniques, for which I wrote a review with Moshe Moshe. And if you need an introduction on the subject, you can find it in my book on path integrals. Okay, just a notice of advertisement for quantum field theory. Okay, what I want to illustrate for you is that quantum field theory has application which range from, as we know, the 100 GeV scale or several 100 GeV scale, LEP and Tevatron, in particle physics, to the scale of a few hundred degrees Kelvin, which is normal phase transition. And finally, as I will show, also in the 10 nanoKelvin range, where we observe Bose-Einstein condensation. Therefore, this, if I'm not totally mistaken, in transforming Kelvin in jets, which I'm not sure about as a theorist, this spans about 23 orders of magnitude. And I think that there are not that many mathematical theoretical frameworks which can compete with this. And it's certainly the quantum theory is the most powerful framework to discuss the properties of an infinite number of degrees of freedom, local degrees of freedom strongly coupled. Okay, now, the more specific point of this talk will be the following. People have, including some distinguished theorists, had for a long time wondered what would be the effect on some Bose-Einstein, theoretical Bose-Einstein condensate, if we add some weak interaction. And now, I will show you that first the interpretation from condensation goes to phase transition, but also the question was what happens to the temperature, which is now becoming a critical temperature. It's surprising that this simple problem was not solved until recently, and if you go into the literature, you find all kind of wrong theories on that. As I said, Carson Wong committed one in particular. The first idea was that, well, it'll be linear, okay? It's a first order effect, so just linear. Okay, so then people realize that if you do a little bit of field theory, you discover that the first correction is what we call the talpole correction, and it has just the effect of shifting the critical chemical potential, so it has no effect on the physics. So then say, ha-ha, it's a second-order effect, so it must be in the square of the interaction. And people argued both sides, and you find in both cases both sides, so there's total confusion, until quite late somebody realized that, in fact, this second-order result was divergent, as well as any other correction you can imagine. So this everything was wrong. So it required some new analysis. And then the authors of the first paper I mentioned did some partial summation of perturbation theory and figure out that maybe it's linear. Okay, and now what I will show is that this problem can be solved using renormalization group techniques, and we know the answer for sure. Okay, so the first point is that this effect is non-perturbative in nature, okay, that cannot just calculate a few diagrams. So once you start working out the renormalization group point of view on this problem, then you can show quite remarkably that the critical temperature increases linearly with the strength of the interaction, like if it would be first order perturbation theory, but it's a non-perturbative effect, which I tried to convince you. And the strength interaction in this game is generally parameterized by the scattering length of the system, okay. And moreover, since it's a non-perturbative effect, the amplitude of this correction, which happened to be universal, cannot be obtained from perturbative calculation. And therefore, I will show that there is an analytic way of getting some idea about the amplitude of the correction shift by using large M techniques. Okay. And finally, the remark is that the result we get, which happened to be independent of n, even though at the end you have to put n equal 2, is in reasonable agreement with more recent numerical simulations. So now, I hope I don't offend you in reminding you what Bose-Einstein condensation is about, so this will help me to fix some notation, and if there are some people who are more mathematical minded, maybe they don't fully remember what it is about. Okay. So, Bose-Einstein condensation is a property of independent bosons. Okay, there is no, it's not a collective effect. Okay, so it's not a phase transition. It's just some phenomenon which is obtained by playing with the chemical tension or the pressure on the system of independent bosons. That's very important. And it's confusing because once you add the interaction, it becomes a phase transition. So that's it. What?
Well, the kinetic energy essentially couples the phases, and that's the same as spin-spin coupling.
Well, okay. No, that's the definition of phase transition, so it becomes semantic. For me, phase transition is a collective effect due to interaction between particles, okay, which is clearly not the case for independent bosons.
The phases are different particles, and the phases are different.
Okay, so let's... Okay. Anyway, I believe we agree on the mathematics of it. Okay, so first it's a property of independent boson. Okay, so to understand what's going on, you have to consider the equation of state for the system, which is a relation between the average number of particles, the temperature, and the chemical potential. Okay, so for independent bosons, which can occupy states with energies omega I, so there is a number of energy states, which I think can occupy, in general, be infinite here, of course. Then the equation state has just a simple form that the average number of particles is the sum of the occupation number for each state, which is given by the usual Bose factor. Okay, so it's... And just a remark is that this expression is only valid in the chemical potential can only vary up to the minimum of the energies, and then of course there is a pole and there is one term which diverges. Now, if you introduce a one particle Hamiltonian, the quantum one particle Hamiltonian, which has eigenvalues omega I, then you can rewrite the equation of state. My green is not doing very well here. I'm sorry about that because all equations are in green, so that's well, it depends. If you have problems seeing the equation, then something has to be done. So you tell. Okay. Okay. Is it better? Light matter. Okay, that's okay. Next time I change color. Okay, so it can be written just as a trace of 1 of exponential minus beta h minus mu minus 1. Okay, that's fairly simple. Now we just imagine that the quantum operator, for instance, has a form which is a sensible assumption here. It's a function of momentum and position. And we consider the high temperature limit of the system, okay? Which means high temperature, it means that the typical difference between two, we assume a discrete spectrum, and the typical difference between two energy levels is much smaller than the temperature. Okay, so it's typically a high temperature approximation. Then, as we know, the system becomes quasi-classical, and the average number of particles is given by an integral which involves only the classical Hamiltonian, and that's the form. Now, it's clear from this expression that the number of particles increases with the chemical potential. And, of course, the chemical potential is now bounded by the minimum of the classical Hamiltonian. And so what is the origin of the Bose-Einstein condensation is that if, when mu goes to this critical value, the integral converges, then one has a paradox, because one discovers that the number of particles is bounded at the fixed temperature. Okay, and that's the essence. Now, the solution of this paradox is obvious. We have used a semi-classical approximation, but we have seen before that the exact result was a sum on energies, and that each term had a pole when the chemical potential reaches one energy eigenvalue. And therefore, it just means, and a little bit of analysis will show you that this expression is fine, except for the ground state energy, because the first thing you hit when you vary the chemical potential is just the ground state energy. And then you have a pole, and what happens is that better analysis shows that every other particle you want to add to the system beyond the one which is in by the semi-classical approximation just goes into the ground state of the system. Yes?
So this is one particle. Yeah?
These are independent bosons within some potential, typically. Okay. So now that's real fun, because that's a mechanism to put a macroscopic number of bosons in the same quantum mechanical state. Okay, and so you have that's the nice thing to play with, and that's the essence of Bose-Einstein condensation. Okay. What is important here is that, you see, normally you would expect, if you had not thought about it, you would expect that you are going to populate many states. Of course, the ground state will be the most populated, but no, you're really putting everything in one state, which is just, that's what is fun in this game. Okay, so this is the reason for that. Now, if you consider the rather theoretical example of free particle of mass m in a box of linear size L, and we'll assume that L becomes large, so that the distance between energy levels becomes eventually much smaller than the temperature, then you can easily complete the calculation. Just to say that, why is it a rather theoretical example? Because in reality, in experiments, a beta approximation is a harmonic well, okay, and therefore this is something but this will be a little bit more difficult to analyze from the analytic point of view. So let me just take this rather theoretical example, which in the future may be realized if you have a very flat potential. So then you discover that the integral converges provides the dimension of space is larger than 2. So that's what we are in 3 dimensions. That's exactly what happens. And you can even calculate the integral. Okay, the critical chemical potential here is 0, so you perform the integral, and you get that the critical density as a function of temperature is just given by zeta. Zeta is the Riemann zeta function, zeta over 2, divided by lambda to the d. Okay, in d dimension. Okay, this is the density, so it's lambda is a length, and it's more precisely the thermal wavelength, which is given by h bar over square root times square root of 2 pi over mt in some normalization. Okay. So these three particles in the box, if you want, the aspect that it's periodic mass is not very relevant, but it's just three particles of mass m in the box. Okay, as I said, it's not really, physical, because you cannot really easily realize such a system, at least at present. Now, alternatively, if you fix the density, then you discover that the equation of state in the semi-classical approximation has no solution for temperature lower than T of critical of M, which scales like H bar over M, N to the power 2 over D, and in 3 dimensions, that's a two-third law of the Bose-Einstein condensation. Okay, and everything being valid only above two dimensions. Okay, now, so if dimension of space has more than three dimensions, as some people argue, then maybe this can apply to higher dimensions. Okay, so now this is the situation we'd consider in what follows, as I said, because it's simpler to analyze and really to work out what happens in an harmonic whale. By the fact, if you put an harmonic whale, then the lower dimension is no longer two, but one. Okay, so in two dimensions, you can have an effect of Bose-Einstein condensation in the harmonic whale. Okay, now that's a way of doing the analysis for free particle, but since I'm going to introduce some interaction, I better write some slightly more general formulae, and this is how I'll do for you. So once you want to start discussing interaction, then you will introduce creation operators of bosons and annihilation operators, and if you speak in field integral language, then you will introduce complex fields depending on space and periodic time, Euclidean time. And then the equation of state can be related to the two-point correlation function of the field, and the formula is just what is written here. So the density is the temperature times this integral over all momenta, and a sum of a so-called Matsubara frequency just comes from the fact that time, the Euclidean time is compact. It has size beta, the inverse temperature, and therefore, if you go in Fourier representation, you have discrete Fourier series. And so then you have an integral on all momenta, a sum on this frequency of the two-point correlation function, which is a function in Fourier representation of momentum and Euclidean frequencies. And for free bosons, which is the case I had just before, it's just the kinematic term, k squared over 2m minus I omega minus mu. And the critical chemical potential is then given by the fact that the inverse of the two-point function vanishes, which yields zero for free bosons. Now, once you have written the equation of state in this more general form, then you realize immediately what's going to happen once you add interaction. This formula is still valid. And this condition then will be a condition for a phase transition. It will be a place where the correlation length diverges, and therefore continuously will go to a Bose-Einstein condensation to a phase transition in this system. And the effect, therefore, of interaction will be both to transform this in an ordinary phase transition for a complex field, so that's O2 or U1 universality class. And of course, the temperature, you expect the temperature to be shifted by the interactions. So, what is the form of the quantum field? That's the important part. I remind you that we're discussing dilute gases. Okay, in this both the case of alkali and the hydrogen atom, you have very dilute system. Why? Because several reasons, but one of them is this, all these systems are metastable, and therefore if the density becomes too high, there are too many collisions and you lose very rapidly your system. Okay, so in the case of a hydrogen atom, you may have spin flips, and then you create H2 molecules which go out of the trap. In the case of alkali, you lose also your particles. So these are very dilute systems. Therefore, in these systems, and that's nice for theory, two-body interactions are already quite weak, okay, because the number of collisions is infrequent, that you have designed the system to do so. And second, higher three-body and higher interaction are even much weaker, so you can totally forget about them. Now, this is quite different from a system in which you have a higher density and strong interaction, because even if by some artificial mean, you are able to reduce the two-body interaction, and this will be here phi to the fourth psi bar psi square term, then you are faced, you will go to a tricritical point, maybe, okay? You will have the next term. While here, since the system dilute, it's a perfect field theoretical example in sense that it stops at quartic interaction, has nothing beyond that, okay? Which is some peculiar system you don't find normally in phase transitions. That's correct. What I'm going to assume is that the typical k scale of the interaction, which is parameterized by a length, which is scattering length, is much smaller than the thermal wavelengths. Okay, and therefore I can replace the potential just by a delta function potential and just parameterize, multiply by the scattering length adjusted to have the proper scattering of the two-body system. Okay, so that's rather simplified. Now it's important to put all the factor rights because eventually you want really to calculate something, okay, so you have to be care of h bar m and things like that, all these trivial details, so that eventually you get the number right. I'm sorry? No, that's a quantum Hamiltonian. So these are in terms of operator. I'm sorry, I shifted from fields, classical fields to operators. Here is no time, it's just the okay. No, what I'm saying is that the range, I assume that the range of interaction is small compared to the typical size of the problem I'm going to study. And therefore, I can replace some two-body potential, which is what it is, given by nature, by some short-range delta function potential, and then you adjust the coefficient so that it gets the proper scattering, and then you find some number, so the pi's are relevant here, okay, multiplied by the scattering length. No, that's correct, but that's when you write this was just related to the previous question. There are two ways of formulating. Here, that's a quantum Hamiltonian in terms of creation and elimination operators, so there's no time. The classical, now if you write it as a field integral over fields, then you will have a field now which is a classical field, which is a function of space, but an additional Euclidean time, and the Euclidean time is periodic and goes from zero to beta.
This is a quantum,
okay, I should, okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, therefore, now, so I'm repeating, okay, one important assumption is that the scattering length is much smaller, and that's essential for the rest of the study, much smaller than the thermal wavelengths. Okay. So in a sense, in this system, the temperature has to be high compared to the difference between energy level, but not too high. Otherwise, then you violate the relation with interactions. Okay, because if T becomes very large, of course, eventually the thermal wavelength goes to zero, and then you don't reach a second. You're not able to have a thermal wavelength which is much smaller than the scattering length. Okay, so it's an intermediate regime, and this explains why you have to go to 10 nanokelvin, and not you cannot do this at room temperature, okay, typically. Okay, now, as I already mentioned, at the critical chemical potential, the two-point correlation function diverges as well as the correlation length, and therefore, what we are really discussing are critical phenomena. Okay, and therefore, we're going to be able to use a renormalization group and things like that. Okay. Now, remember, for future use, that in the free approximation, since we are going to work in the weak interacting limit, just remember that the density is proportional to the inverse cube of the thermal wavelengths. And the thermal wavelengths, if I put h bar equal zero, is essentially inversely the square of the thermal wavelengths is proportional to the inverse of the temperature of the ideal gas. Yeah, I have put h bar equal to 1, which you can don't treat either, but it's here, okay, in the following set, it's
said 0, that's why.
Oh, 0, that's too drastic. For a quantum phenomena, that's somewhat drastic. I'm sorry about that. Okay, now, what we want to calculate, okay, as an example of something we can do here to explain the physics of the problem, is that we want to calculate the shift of the temperature, and which is now a critical temperature, with respect to the Bose-Einstein value. And it's actually what happened is it's a relative shift, which is interesting. And rather than doing that, it's happened to be simpler to calculate the shift in the density at fixed temperature And since we are working at leading order, then we can use just the relation between temperature and density as it comes out from the Bose-Einstein condensation. So delta T over T is minus 2/3 delta N over N, where N is the density. So we're going to calculate the shift in the density at fixed temperature. Now, this is not difficult, so you just... the second point, I'm sorry, I missed one point here. Since we are interested in this large system phenomena, as we all know, it means that essentially the Matsubara frequency, only the zero Matsubara frequency is relevant. Okay, the rest of the shift between two eigenvalues will be much larger than the system, the quantities we want to calculate. And therefore, we can just draw, at leading order, we can just drop all frequencies except zero. And as a result, we'll go from a quantum theory, a quantum statistical theory, to a classical statistical theory. Okay. And if you do that, then you can verify, again, you have to be careful about the factors, so there, if you cannot just, you will find that the variation of the density, okay, the variation density is up to a factor, which, see, this is a three-dimensional formula, so it's inverse to a length square, times the integral dk, okay, so this is magic, k square, and here, if you would have just the free theory, you would have the independent particles, you have one, free particles, you have just one over k square, and now here, you have k square plus some quantity, which is the effect of interaction. Okay, so that's a magic formula we're going to use, okay, this is what the quantity we want to evaluate. So, as I said, once restricted to zero Matsubara frequency components, the field psi and psi da can be considered classical, but now only function of space, okay, there's no time involved anymore, and everything is just classical statistical theory. To put everything in a form which we are more used to, and normalization, which are those of quantum field theory, usual statistical field theory for phase transition, I can parameterize a complex field in terms of two real coordinates. I have to rescale by some temperature factor to make it as usual. And then the partition function becomes just an integral over some complex field, some pair of fields, two real fields, phi 1 and phi 2. And with some Euclidean action, which is given by, if you do everything alk, d mu phi square plus phi square and a term phi to the fourth. And the relation between the initial parameter is just as written here. R quotient phi square is the temperature times the chemical potential. So the chemical potential sits here and will be adjusted to the critical value. And the four-point interaction is A over lambda square in these units. Phi is a scalar. Phi 1 and phi 2, I had a complex scalar, I replaced it by two real scalar, for reasons which will appear later. And so this is the square, this is phi 1 plus square plus phi 2 square, okay? So this, it's a two vector, and this model has an obvious, because it had a U1 symmetry due to particle number conservation, now it has an auto-symmetry in this real representation, okay? So we have just the usual n-vector model for two components with O2 symmetry and some relation between initial parameters of the quantum theory and this classical theory. Eventually, we'll keep the dimension arbitrary, also we are only interested in three dimensions because for calculation purposes, it happened to be useful to use dimensional regularization. And I will just also, it's just a mathematical curiosity, I will say a few words later about that. That's right, XY mod. That's readily solved, yes, except there's some point which makes it interesting. Okay, at this point you'd say, well, this we have worked out 25 years ago or 30 years ago, and that's fine, okay? But there's a few interesting points which are new. I mean, not that they are strikingly new in the sense that we could have done this 30 years ago, but just we didn't think about the problem, that's all. Okay. And also you have to relate the two-point correlation function of the quantum model at zero frequency to the so-called two-point vertex function or one PI function of the classical model, and that's a relation. Okay? So the quantity we want to calculate is this, which is the inverse of the two-point correlation function in the O2 model. Okay. Now, of course, as you just mentioned, you cannot fail to notice that this same model describes the universal property of a superfluid helium transition. So the question mainly is, what is different from the usual superfluid transition? Now, the way I've written, as the theory here, it clearly suffers from UV divergences. Okay, we have to use some regularization. And here, the choice is imposed by the model. It came from a quantum model in which there were some higher momentum scale, which was provided by the Matsubara frequency, which is inversely proportional to the thermal wavelength. And therefore, it means that if I have to do some regularized calculation, but eventually I use dimensional regularization, but if I want to keep track of the cutoff in a physical sense, I can always replace this propagator by this one, and then everything is convergent. Okay. This model has no divergences, of course. Now, the important point is that, as I show later, the relative shift of the critical temperature is dominated by long-distance property, and therefore it's universally independent on the cutoff procedure. So I don't have to worry about what I do here. Which is, at the first sight, was for me slight surprise, because temperatures usually are not universal, and so we never worry about them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth saying that new feature here that we didn't do 30 years ago is trying to make a strict mapping.
That's right. It's, as I said, it's a pure problem. I mean, 3 e⁴ without extra additional operator and all these things like that. Okay, it's a very pure example. It's a super renormalized quantum field theory applied to physics, which is something I thought was not possible. Okay, now just a word, in case you worry, of course, instead of just cutting the theory by putting the field, keeping only the zero frequency, you could worry about what is the effect of higher frequency modes. Now, what you can do is you can take the field integral and you can integrate all modes except the zero mode. That's typically what one does in finite temperature quantum field theory. Now, you will discover that the effect of this is just to renormalize some coefficient, but the renormalization effect will be higher order in the interaction. And since we're interested only in leading order interaction, we can just forget about them.
That's very painful for us
regularly,
because that's a very
obtuse
reintegration. We're
quite puzzled by that. Okay. You can move more quickly there. That's right. Well, you know, that's your for you, I mean, you know. It's your problem. Okay, so there'll be neglect. We can neglect everything, because we are just working at the leading order effect. Now, as I said, because the interaction with I just mentioned being, you could imagine calculating the tension by perturbation theory. However, we know that the perturbative expansion for a critical theory doesn't exist for any fixed dimension d smaller than 4. It's infinite divergent, and therefore you cannot use perturbation theory. However, you can still use renormalization group arguments. And now, if you want to do a detailed analytic calculation, then it proves useful to replace this model, which is an O2 model, by an ON model, because then we'll be able to work out the one of a Kapteyn expansion, knowing that then we have to put n equal 2, and then, of course, the question is whether it's sensible to do that, but that's something I will address later. Okay, so therefore, we now consider ON symmetric model. The field has n components, 1 to n. And as I said, later we'll use this trick to work out an expansion. The density is given by the average of pi square, and so it's proportional. This is the physical density of the initial problem, and it's related to the same quantity, the density, quote-unquote, in the quantum field theory, and this is what we have to evaluate. Well, delta ij is a two-point vertex function, which is inverse of the two-point correlation function, and it's really rho minus its value for 1 over k square, which matters. Now, we'll prove by a simple renormalization group analysis that the change in rho in three dimensions is linear in the coupling constant. Okay. For this, we have to introduce some renormalization group equations. And I will use the formalism in which the renormalization group equation corresponds to moving the cutoff and see what is and show, and using the fact that moving the cutoff is equivalent to change the normalization of the field and the coupling constant. Okay. So the cutoff here, as I already mentioned, is essentially inversely proportional to the thermal wavelength. That's a cutoff. Now I will introduce a dimensionless coupling constant. In D dimension, the coupling constant, the phi to the 4 coupling constant, has some dimension. And if I multiply by the cutoff to the power D minus 4, then I get a dimensionless quantity, and it's proportional to the scattering length divided by lambda to the D minus 2. And that's clearly, by assumption, much more than 1. Okay, so we have a regime of very small coupling. And you see here appearing explicitly, because these are dimensionless quantities, what it means is that small coupling is really related to scattering length being much smaller than the thermal wavelength. Now, in terms of the cutoff and this coupling constant, dimensional coupling constant, the renormalization group equation for the inverse two-point function, the two-point vertex function reads like that. Now, normally, when you discuss critical phenomena, to now everything can is what we would do for helium or whatever, the N-model in general. Well, you say, well, now I just look at the infrared zero of the beta function, this term then vanishes, and then I have scaling. Okay, and that's it. Okay. Now what we're going to do is integrate exactly this equation, not just using. And to do this, I will, since this is a partial differential equation, I will set gamma 2 of P lambda and G, write it, parameterize it at P square Z of G, F of P over lambda over G. And if you put this back, you will see that this is consistent, provided the function Z of G, which is a finite renormalization of the field, satisfies this equation, and lambda of G, which has a dimension of momentum, it's proportional to the cutoff, satisfies this equation. Okay, this is not what we do usually in this case, okay? I mean, we don't worry about that. So, if I do that, now, just so you have to remember these two equations if you can read them. Okay, gamma 2 is P square Z of G F of P over lambda over G, and beta D log Z of G over DG is eta, and beta D log of lambda of G over DG is minus 1. Okay, now to integrate this equation, we need some idea about the beta function. Now we know that beta function is minus 4 minus DG plus n plus s plus 8 g square over 48 pi square, and eta starts at order g square plus order g cube. As a consequence, z of g is an which is exponential from 0 to g of eta over beta. You see that eta starts at g square, beta starts at g, therefore this is of order g, and this is 1 plus g square. Since we are working at leading order, we replace z by 1, and we don't worry anymore. Therefore, the shift of the density is now integral up to some cutoff, limit, I mean, equivalent for G going to zero of this triple integral, 1 over P square, 1 over F of P over lambda G minus 1. For dimensional ground, as I say, lambda, as I just mentioned before, lambda G is proportional to lambda, and you can calculate, also integrate the other equation, and you get that lambda of G is G to the power 1 over 4 minus D, lambda, which gives a scale, exponential, and here these terms come from the subtraction, because 1 over g integral d of g diverges, so you have to put a 1 subtraction, and you have this quantity. Now, the important thing, and which is specific to the problem, is that lambda of g is a crossover scale separating a universal long-distance behavior, which is governed by the infrared fixed point, which is a non-trivial solution of beta of g equals 0, from a universal, and that's important, short-distance regime governed by the Gaussian fixed point. Okay. Now, why does this, doesn't this come, this issue doesn't come in when I discuss helium transition? Okay. It's very simple. For such a regime to exist, which means a universal large momentum behavior, okay, you need that lambda of g is much smaller than the cutoff. Okay, otherwise, if lambda G and lambda are of the same order, this regime that just doesn't exist. You just see infrared scaling, and that's all. Okay. Now, generally, in a system in which you make no special assumption, the coupling constant is over the 1. This is certainly what happens in helium. And therefore, if you just look at the formula, there's nothing more to be said, because if G is over the 1, all these quantities, this is some number, and you find that lambda G is up to some numerical factor, just a cutoff. So there is no universal short distance behavior or large momentum behavior because you're immediately in the infrared regime. However, here, let's implement the condition lambda of g much smaller than lambda. Then you find that this quantity, which is dimensionless, is much smaller than 1. Now, it's clear that if g is much smaller than 1, okay, this quantity, of course, is of order unity, but then you have this factor here, and this condition is satisfied. Okay. So the reason why something interesting happened here is that because initially the two-point interaction expressed in some dimensionless unit is very small. So you are very close. First, various elements. First, it's a pure phi to the 4 theory. You don't have phi to the 6 to worry about anything like that, which you would have in another system like helium, which would drive you to some pre-critical point maybe. Second, so that's the first condition. The second condition is that initially we start very close from the Gaussian fixed point. And therefore, it takes forever by renormalization group transformation to go to the infrared fixed point. So there's plenty of time to see a universal large momentum or short distance behavior, which is clearly separated from lattice artifacts or short distance phenomena. Now, this is not the only case where this such a situation matters. The nonlinear sigma loop, which we analyzed in the 70s with Bresin, has the same feature, that you have a crossover between truly infrared behavior, which in case is free gods or modes, separated from a critical behavior, which is related to short distance behavior. Okay, so that's... Okay. Now, therefore, this condition is satisfied. And therefore, there really lambda of g is really this crossover regime between what? Well, the truly infrared behavior is given by the infrared fixed point, so gamma of t is p2 minus eta, where eta is a critical exponent of the helium transition, and this is valid for momenta much smaller than lambda of g. Then gamma of 2 goes like p square, because it's a Gaussian fixed point, so it's just free field theory, for momenta which are much larger than the crossover regime, much, much smaller than the cutoff. Okay, now, with this condition, we'll show that when this condition is satisfied, delta is T is proportional to lambda of G. Now, for this, I need two elements. Let me just come back here to this equation here. Okay? You see, in this equation, first, to be convinced that this is a pure quantity, this relative shift is universal, has to get rid of the cutoff here. Okay? Otherwise, it will depend on the cutoff structure and then certainly cannot be universal. So I have to show that this integral converges when p becomes infinite and also when p goes to zero, otherwise the integral doesn't exist. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So this exponential part plays no role, okay? That's only relevant part is this factor g1 over 4 minus t. Absolutely. I just wrote the exact expression so you have it on your eyes. Okay, so what I have to show is that this integral converges for large momenta and for small momenta so that this then becomes some universal quantity. Now, first thing is that from perturbation theory in three dimensions, I know that f of p, which is gamma of q of p squared, starts with 1. Okay, that's it. And then the next correction is over the log of p over p squared. Why? Because the second correction, the first non-trivial correction, first, large momentum behavior is governed by the Gaussian fixed point, so I can use perturbation theory. Okay? So now I calculate this. The first term is 1, and the second correction, well, it's not here, but it is just given by one Feynman diagram, which is just that. Okay. Now, it's not too difficult because the first diagram, this one, which appears at previous order, is just a renormalization of the chemical potential. So the first one, which has a momentum, depends on this one. Now, in three dimensions, this is of the form integral d2 q1 d3 q2 over something, which is three propagators. Okay, so it's not surprising that it goes like log of momentum, and if I divide by p squared, just log of p over p squared. And every higher order diagram is even smaller at momentum, or at least not larger. Therefore, if you now consider this expression, you see that here this difference is proportional to 1 over log p over p square, and therefore this integral converges at large momentum. Now, second, if you consider the infrared properties, okay, you have d3p over 1 over p square, but this goes like p minus 2 eta, because the two-point function was 2p square 2 minus eta, but I've divided by p square, so it's p over eta. Now, provide eta is smaller than 1, which is realized, this is infrared convergent. Therefore, this integral is a infrared is a convergent both in the infrared and in the large momentum. Now, if this is the case, then to calculate, I can make a change of variable, a change scale. I set p equals lambda of g times k, and then I get a pure norm multiplied by lambda over g. Okay, so the g dependence, which is a dependence in interaction, is purely contained in lambda of g. Now, for g small, so we have to go one step further back. No, sorry, here. Okay, you see as this integral, if you set p equals 3, this is g, and this is for the 1. Therefore, remarkably enough, at the end of the day, you find that delta rho over rho is proportional to g, and therefore, to the since this is dimensionless, is proportional to the product of the scattering length by the density to the power 1/3. Okay, but realize that this linear behavior is not perturbative. Indeed, if you would work out the same for generic dimension, you get g to the power d minus 2 over 4 minus d. So it's a pure accident that when you set d equals 3, it becomes an analytic behavior linear on g. So you could have the illusion that this is the effect of perturbation theory, but it is not. Okay. So, therefore... That's right. The next one, as far as I remember, the next one is a square log a or something like that. Okay. Then you have logarithm and all of things like that. Okay. So you will discover the next order rates that are singularities. But here, by some just remarkable accident, it happened not to be the case. Okay. So if you give the result, you would try very hard to show that this is the perfect order perturbation theory. I presume. Okay. Now, of course, so first, this result is non-perturbative, and second, this integral cannot be calculated from perturbation theory because this has not the perturbation, the proper, this perturbation theory is just divergent, and so you can do nothing with that. Okay. Now, since we want to complete the calculation by calculating the amplitude, which is here in front, and which is a universal quantity, okay, therefore, in principle, we should be able to calculate, okay, we decided to use this trick we knew from old times, which is trying to calculate the coefficient by using 1 over n expansion. That's the reason why it generalized the model from O2 model to O(n) model. And then we'll see what happens when you set n equal 2. Okay, that's always the game with large n expansion is that it gives a rough order of magnitude. You're never sure how large the corrections are, but you have to realize that at this point, nobody had any idea what is the scale of this norm, okay? If it's 10 to the 5 or 9, I mean, no. So just to have an idea whether it's a number for the 1 was an interesting result. Okay, so now, how I'm doing with time? Okay, I have time. Okay, so now let me just, okay, I didn't intend to give you a lecture on large N techniques. Prepared to do it privately, but I thought that it'd take too much time. So now, large N calculation, a calculation in which you take N, the number of components of the field to infinity, and you fix the product of the coupling constant, the phi to the fourth coupling constant by N. Okay, so it's a limit N to infinity at N you fixed. Okay, you discover that's a proper way of doing things. I mean, that leads to a limit. Okay. Now, to do it in practice, you can, in the old time, people would sum diagrams, but of course we know better. You use quantum field theory, and you use a few algebraic tricks, and eventually the large N extension comes as a result of steepest descent. Okay. So, and as I said, I mean, if you're interested, I can give you some additional, F of P, yeah, okay. You cannot, yeah. So F of P is here, okay? So it's the ratio of the two-point function, the inverse two-point function, the two-point vertex function, gamma 2 in moment in Fourier representation, divided by the leading order perturbation, which is P squared. Okay, so this is, so essentially we have to calculate the two-point function, okay? That's the point. Or the inverse two-point function, which is what is relevant here. Okay, now, it's not too difficult to verify that at leading order in the large n expansion, which is just taking the saddle point, you gain nothing, okay? Gamma 2 remains p squared without correction, okay? That's unfortunate, but otherwise life would have been much slightly simpler. But no, you have to calculate the one of n correction. And when we thought that, we worried a little bit, because then it meant for a few seconds, we thought maybe the result is proportional to one over n, and then put n equal. You feel uneasy to put n equal 2. Okay. Also, it's purely psychological, of course. Okay, so you have to calculate the one of n correction. Okay, now just in diagram terms, since I don't want to play with the field integrals here, because it would take a little bit too much time. What you have to sum for large n here is diagrams which have this form. Okay, so you have now this part is a four-point function at leading order, I mean at order u square or g square, and then you have to insert this inside a two-point function. Okay, and you have to sum this, and for large n, it happened to be a geometrical series. Okay, this is in terms of diagrams. So this is what, now if you do it right, this is what you see. Okay, here this is just a subtraction. This difference just means that you subtract the critical, the chemical potential so that the theory remains critical. So that's the reason why you have 1 over Q square. The P plus Q square is just this line here. Okay, here you have P plus Q, and so you have momentum Q transferred along this bubble diagram. And B of Q is the one contribution to the four-point function, and there, which in three dimension is finite, in ultraviolet finite. So it's dDQ over K square K plus Q square. And here you see the geometrical series. If you expand this in power of u, you will recover the product of these bubbles. So that's not too difficult. Okay. Now you have to evaluate a little bit these quantities. Okay, now, first, you discover that when Q goes to zero, which is the only regime which will be relevant, B of Q is proportional. Here, epsilon is, now I have set as usual, epsilon equals 4 minus D, also it's not very important at this point. So this is proportional, and you see this for dimensional reasons. You see that this is DDQ over Q to the fourth, so it's going to be proportional to Q to the power D minus 4. This is what you see. And if you introduce a cutoff, then you have a small correction to that. But of course, the important part will be this. And B of epsilon or D is something you can calculate, the product of gamma function. And this is the usual loop factor, which I factorized by usual convention. And therefore, what is important is that B of 1 is 1/8. Okay. Now, this I just introduced. But since I have no time really to comment about that, let's forget about this. Okay. It's a little bit off. So, now how does it look like? So now you have this nice integral to calculate. Now, it's rather easy to verify that if you would be allowed to exchange integral, if you integrate on Q first and P later, this integral is trivial to calculate. Okay, that's rather easy to see. Now, if you do it in three dimension, you know, this is one of the rare examples where you are punished by doing something mathematically wrong. In the sense that, okay, you verify that you get zero times infinity. So, nevertheless, it's very tempting to exchange integrals, and that's the reason why we use dimensional regularization. Okay, there is here no other purpose than to do this integral. Okay, so this is why we worked everything in D dimension, and then we said at the end of the story, D equal to 3. Now, if you do it, so once you are in D dimension, you can exchange freely the integrals. So you first calculate the integral over P, and you get a bunch of gamma function, times Q to some power, which is given by dimensional considerations. Now, what happens is that you have here gamma of d minus 3 is on, when d goes to 3. You have the pole of the gamma function, and therefore this goes to 0. Okay? That's what's happening. Instead, if you just go on with the calculation, the next integral to be calculated, this one, which is a little bit harder, but you manage, and you get here something, which is where you see here 1 over u to the power d minus 2 times 4 minus d, which is, of course, the one which reduces for d equals 3 to the linear terms. So then you can take the d equals 3 limit, and the two integration yields a factor which is proportional to u, and therefore to the coupling constants with a well-defined amplitude. Okay, so that's an amusing slide, an amusing exercise. Okay, so what we had in mind we were able to achieve, okay, we recover that the variation of the density is proportional to the interaction at leading order. We even have the amplitude. And in terms of the original parameter, then you go back to what it means in terms of temperature, and you get the delta Tc over Tc is 8 pi over 3 divided by 3 times zeta over 3 half multiplied by a over lambda, and you can also write this some numerical factor times n to the power 1/3, and then you get that C is 2.33, about something like that. Okay, so that we have achieved our program. Now, what is remarkable in this result now is that it doesn't depend on n. Okay, so where did it come from? Okay, I told you that you see here in this formula, delta rho is proportional to 1 over n because I had to work out the 1 over n correction. Okay, leading order n, nothing survived. However, it is 1 over n correction multiplied by a function of n times u. Now, just because in three dimensions, it's eventually proportional to nu, it's linear, the n cancels. Okay, which was this is something we had not really anticipated. So that the result looks much nicer than you would have if you would have some factor 1 over n here. From, of course, as I say, it's psychological. This is valid for n going to infinity, so it's just larger n limit. But nevertheless, it looks nicer. Okay, so.
Where did zeta function of 3 halves come from?
Zeta of 3 halves?
Yeah.
This came from the relation between, as I told you, what we calculate was the variation of the density. But then we use the relation, the leading order relation between density and temperature, which involves the zeta of 3 halves. Okay, this was the Bose-Einstein
in three dimensions.
Okay, that was the zeta 2 over d, which appeared quite early in the Bose-Einstein condensation theory. So it just went through everywhere. Of course. So it's easy to set n equal 2 since the result doesn't depend on n, but it's only valid for n large. Okay, you have to remember, don't delude yourself that you got the exact answer. Okay, now, what happened somewhat later, and this is one of the papers we found, that up to now, these calculations are fairly easy. I mean, it's something you can work out in a piece of paper without thinking too much. Nevertheless, Arnold and Tomaship went on to calculate the 1 over n correction, which is much harder. Okay? And you have next order, start being a serious calculation. And what they got is that this number is replaced by 1.71. Okay, so it's a 30% correction, which means that we are more or less in business. Okay, this is typical for large n expansion. Okay, you don't expect to have a very small correction. Okay, so and then you got if you add them, then you get 1.71. Okay, so presumably we are on the order of magnitude. Now, a number of other methods, people have started doing lattice calculations, simulations, summation of perturbation, a lot of things like that. And there is also a list of results by now. And more or less, you would say that this number is probably something like 1.3. So we have been off by less than a factor of 2, which is for such a simple minor calculation, it's quite good. So, conclusion, okay? Now, the conclusion is such that using renormalization group argument, we can show that even though the system, once you when you start with a system which is some theoretical Bose-Einstein condensate and you add some interaction, then really you have something like superfluid helium. Okay? However, because the interaction initially is very weak, for large scales, it still looks like a Bose-Einstein condensate. And actually, it would be if one day the people do Bose-Einstein condensate which are large enough, then we could see renormalization group with our eyes. Okay? You would look at some scale, the present physical scale, and say, aha, these are free particles in some box or whatever. Okay? And then you start looking at larger and larger distance and say, well, the interaction increases. And eventually, on very large scale, you say, well, that's just superfluid helium. Okay? So we could see in pictures, we could see the transition, the renormalization group transition due to the effective interaction depending on scales between a free gas and something which would look very much like helium transition. Okay, so it would be amusing to do that, but I think that's very far in the future.
No, that's what I was saying. Those experiments have been done. Peter Weichmann, Michael Stephen, and Mark Russell and myself have actually calculated the crossover in row S.
Okay. She says that's
just what you're saying.
You say, okay, so I'm...
The leading order in S.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's nice because you can see by your eyes, or let's see, you can take pictures and you see effective couplings from building up depending on scale, which is a very nice exercise. Okay, in helium you cannot because you immediately the interaction is strong, so you just see infrared scaling.
So actually,
well, it was related, you see, to this factor lambda of g. Okay, so you have to put inside the correlation as a scattering length, thing like that, and then you can get some idea. I mean, so now it depends on the system, of course. It's something you can calculate. It's something you can calculate what is the cost of a scale.
No. Experiment, which essentially you uncovered and we uncovered too, which is something like d minus 2 over 4 minus d, which turns out to be 2 in 3 dimensions. And that tells you how you go over from the strongly interacting xy critical point, if you like, to the weakly interacting.
Yeah, but he was asking whether this is some millimeters or something like that. I would imagine that the scale is certainly not more than millimeter. I mean, it's a rather small scale. Okay? But I don't know exactly. I've never worked it out seriously.
I mean, the only scale really is, as you said, is always the penalty of early
wave. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's really the only scale.
Okay.
And then, as you say, the ratio of scattering
length. To that, okay. Anyway. Okay. So anyway, that's an experimentalist question. Okay, I'm not supposed to answer to this kind of question here and pretend that I know what experiments are doing, really. Except that I'm too sure that people have gone quite far. People have seen vortices in this, like in helium. Now people have observed a large number of vortices and things like that. Okay, so it's really when you look at it, it has similarities with helium. Okay, provided you have something which is large enough, a condensate which is large enough. Okay, now second is that renormalization group arguments have allowed us to prove that the shift of the transition temperature at fixed density is proportional to the dimensionless combination of the product of the scattering length by the density to a power 1/3 for weak interactions in the weak interacting limit. And this result is non-perturbative and cannot be obtained, therefore, by any perturbative calculation, so you'd really need renormalization group. Cannot just do it like that. And as I mentioned, many distinguished and undistinguished physicists have gotten wrong results here. So it means that it was worth thinking about it in a serious way. Then since we, for the same reason, we cannot calculate at the critical point, we have introduced a standard technique in quantum field theory, which is a large N expansion. So we have generalized the problem from N equal 2 to N arbitrary and calculate for N large. And we have obtained the universal coefficient in front of an to the 1/3 as a power series in 1 of n, and we are just calculating norm, which for non-trivial reason happened to be independent on n. And some two other authors have calculated the 1 of n correction. Now, taking account the 30% 1 of n correction, one finds the result which is in reasonable agreement with most numerical values, and therefore it means that this large N calculation is sensible. Okay, so I think I want to stop here.